It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
Well, today we're talking about one of the most influential bands in rock history and its current iteration. Sly and the Family Stone revolutionized popular music by blending rock, funk, soul, and R&B into a sound that inspired generations of artists and gave us timeless hits like Dance to the Music, Everyday People, and Hot Fun in the Summertime. My guest is Rock and Roll Hall of Famer inductee and original founding member Jerry Martini, who, along with Fun Stone, the daughter of Sly Stone and the late Cynthia Robinson, will be performing with the Family Stone in Myron's at the Smith Center August the 8th. Together, they're keeping the music and spirit of Sly and the Family Stone alive with a show that celebrates one of the greatest musical legacies of all time. We'll talk about the band's incredible history, its lasting influence on modern music, and why these classic songs continue to get audiences on their feet. The Family Stone performs in Myron's at the Smith Center this Saturday, August 8th. Two performances, 5 and 8 p.m. And for ticket information, go to thesmithcenter.com. For everything about the Family Stone, go to thefamilystoneband.com, thefamilystoneband.com, and follow them on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And Jerry, welcome to the show.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
You are looking
like we could be cousins, man.
Yeah, well, for those who are listening, both of us are wearing really nice hats.
Yeah, good taste, man.
What's that?
You know, good taste.
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate it, as you do as well. I got to ask you the question that I'm sure everybody always asks you when they see you guys perform. What keeps you in the game? Is it just the love of the music, the love of keeping the family together? What is it that just propels you to just get on and tour and perform all the time?
Well, I have the musician's retirement plan going for me. It's called death. So I'm going with that. I'm going to bop till I drop, man.
I love it. When you first started out, because I think most people recognize that you were the visionary behind the formation of Sly and the Family Stone. Give us a little bit of our audience, a little bit of that background before we talk about the current iteration, which
well, we kind of grew up together. We've known each other since we were teens. And I first saw him in the East Coast. He had Dick Clark's music thing, and in California, you had Dick Stewart's dance party, and I saw him on there with his short Cubatas haircut, and that's before he became Funky Sly Stone. He was Sylvester Stewart then, but he was amazing, and we both played in a band called Joe Piazza and the Continentals,
nice. And
which is a local band that played all around, and we became friends, and he played bass in that band, but come to find out, he played about six instruments, as his brother Freddie played even more. But anyway, he was amazing, and we started out as friends, and then he became a local favorite disc jockey. You know, that's when he started using Sly Stone, and he did a lot of incredible things on that radio program that was revolutionary. He even did like "Let's Go Get Stoned," you know. That was like a number one hit, but he took it out of the garbage can because the media didn't want to use the word stone there, you know. So anyway, he pulled it out and played it every hour, and it became number one hit. And Ray Charles just had him on his show when he came into town. And I got so many stories, more than you have hours.
I bet.
But anyway, so we played in the same local band. And then he wrote "The Swim" for Bobby Freeman when he was 19. That was his first gold record. And Bobby Freeman was a local celebrity, you know, at the time. It's before your time.
But, I don't think
anyway,
so.
Anyway, I worked at the Condor Club, too, for years. And because the owners was Pete and Gino, forget about it. And they... the other one, they sent me to Italy to make it big time. And I went to Italy, and they were like, we were doing like the swim and the, all these, the mashed potatoes. and they were still doing the twist in Italy. So they were so far behind, I just had a good time, you know.
You should have had Chubby Checker in the band with you, right?
Yeah, they wouldn't have recognized him. You know, like the number one song in Italy was Una Notte Così, which means today is Sunday for us. I remember the guy is Gastone Parigi. I can remember way back then, but I don't know what I had for lunch yesterday. That's how it goes with ancient memories, you know.
Well, so you get together with Sly and you create Sly and the Family Stone. And right. Did you get a sense when you first started out? Did any of you have the sense that it was going to be this very influential band and creating music that people still react to and dance to?
I did. That's why I talked him into starting the band.
How did you
have
that?
He had one hit, okay? He got his first gold record called The Swim when he was 19 years old. And I was playing with him then. He's 5 months and 15 days younger than me. And it was a sad affair when I played at. When they were putting him in the ground, I was right by the grave site, and I played Amazing Grace on my saxophone for him when they were putting him away. And Sheila E. was there with me. She's a close friend. And we both cried. And it was a sad time, but I tried to look at the good side. He did so much for music, so much for our friendship. And I just feel blessed to be involved in this whole thing.
And the band is still together. I want to talk to you about that in a second. The fact that the not only the band continues, the family continues. You have fun with you, and you can talk about some of the guys in the band too, if you'd like, as we go through.
Yeah.
I just get that you mentioned you got that first sense that this would be a big influence after that first song, but then you had so many other hits after that that. I guess what I'm asking in a way, and I haven't formulated right in my head, but I think I've got it now. Were you aware that these songs would last as long as they did?
Yeah.
Have?
I did.
From the very
beginning? I felt that they were, I guess, I looked at him as, I hate to use the word genius, but I'm going to use it anyway, because there's not a better word. But when I met him, I was playing at the Condor Club in San Francisco. And Pete and Gino were the owners, and he used to come in all the time. It was the number one spot in North Beach in San Francisco. It was the beginning of Carol Doda, the first topless. That's when I met her, she was only a size 33 before all that mess, but she was wonderful. She was a close friend.
Right.
And anyway, and so I came in and was watching us, and I met him before that on local gigs. But he came in, he was watching us with George and Teddy, and he saw something. So the end result was we started the band together, and it was in December 1965 that we put Sly and the Family Stone together.
But differentiating from the band and the personalities versus the music, you were sure that the music itself was going to be around for a long time.
Absolutely.
And was it just the fact that it was, I'll use this overused term, but I think you'll appreciate it, Jerry, in the sense that where I'm aiming for, it was this fusion of various genres and styles,
yes,
and forms of music that was unique for the time. And yet sometimes something that's unique for the time doesn't last. And this has always lasted. So is there one secret to that you can share with us that maybe we don't know why? I mean, everybody always is dancing to this stuff and listening to it and enjoying it.
Yeah, I know why in my head, because when I met him, I looked at him and I thought he was a genius. I hate to use that word because it's overused so much, but I looked into his scope, and he played almost all the instruments in the band. His brother Freddie did play all the instruments, but he was so aware of what was going on.
Where was the music that you could tell that this was going to last? I understand the genius of Sly from your point of view, but what about the music itself? How is it that it has gone from decade to decade to decade? And again, you're going to be on August 8th at the Smith Center.
Right. Well, my answer to that is she was very aware of everything. We just go back to when we were teenagers, and I just couldn't believe his talent. And he gave up in a way when he became a disc jockey. He had already had a band called Sly and the Stoners, And that's what it was. He goes, guys would show up. They put their cigarettes on the end of their guitar like they did in the old days. And they would be late and they would be drunk or worse. And it was like a normal band of those days. But he didn't like that. So he gave it up and became a disc jockey. And I used to go hang out at the studio with him. That's before all the communication you had. He used to talk to me over the microphone. He goes, hey, Jerry, listen to this. And I would be out on my way to my gig at the Tiger of Go-Go at the Hilton out at the airport. And he would play stuff for me. And we just had a brother type relationship from the very beginning, you know.
Tell us about the Family Stone. Now, this is a different iteration. Obviously, I mentioned it earlier in the introduction. It's not Sly and the Family Stone, but it's the officially sanctioned band that performs all over the country, coming to Las Vegas again at the Smith Center August 8th for two shows, which is great, 5 and 8. You've got a fairly big band, and you've got Fun as well. Does she's part of that family because she's the daughter, obviously.
Yeah, of Cynthia and Sly.
Yeah, exactly. Tell us a little bit about her, and then maybe some of the band members.
Cynthia used to bring her to the shows even before she played, and she would watch. And so when I let go the previous singer I had, who's unbelievable talent, but when you get too big for your own britches, so to speak, then you have to go. You have to be a family member,
right?
And that's why I've had the band for since 1997. I started put the Family Stone together, and with various artists, but the ones that I have right now have been with me a long time. Blaise Sasson, my musical director. We played together in Hawaii. I ran away to Hawaii in 1980, you know, after I had a band called Rubicon. And we played a Cal Jam 2. We had top 20 hit. And then it crashed. You know, 20th Century Fox crashed, and I crashed with it. So I went to Hawaii in 1980 with $100 in my pocket and started all over again. And here I am, an old man.
Yeah, I'm telling you, you look great. You look great. I could possibly be a Hawaiian shirt you're wearing, but I'm not sure.
What's that now? I loved it in Hawaii, though. That's where I met my wife also, which has a lot to do with the fact that I'm in relatively good health right now.
You know? Right. Yeah, you mentioned.
I have a hereditary disease. I'm on my second pacemaker.
Wow. Right now,
but it's not slowing me down at all.
No, you're out.
I walk 10,000 steps a day, or try to. You go to the gym, and if you sit around the house and reminisce, then they'll be reminiscing over you, you know, soon.
That's
why Sly died so early. He stopped working out. Well, there's a million reasons on that, but I won't get into that. Right. Other than he was a very, very close friend.
Do you have people coming up to you all the time after a performance and you use the term reminisce, which is a good term, but do you find that fans that come to see you want to reminisce after the show when they meet you and talk about the formation of the band, et cetera? Or are they kind of like you are, where you're focusing on today?
Yeah. Yeah, people always ask, but I handpicked everybody. And I've had a few different lead singers. At first, I went for somebody that sounded and looked like Sly. I won't mention any names because I don't want to. And anyway, that wasn't the key. You know, I found my lead singer that I have right now, Swank Stewart, Sylvester Stewart, made Swank. And I was at B.B. King's one night in New York, and I always jammed with that band. And he came on stage. He went around. He played every instrument in the band, every one. He went around to the drums, and I said, and Aldi Marino, who was our first agent and then the vice president of CBS, who still I talk to a couple times a month, we were looking, and we looked at each other, and we went, we nodded. So I asked him, I said, you want to play in my band? And he said, give me 2 weeks. So I said, well, I have to go home and fire the existing guy. And the guy was great. He was just the wrong person. He looked like Sly, sounded like Sly, but he couldn't read music. And he sat at the piano and he had a music book up there. After every song, he would turn the page, you know, but he couldn't read music. So my life, I want a little bit more realism than that. And the guy I have right now, Swank Stewart, is brilliant. He's like a son to me. In fact, I'm the same age as his dad. So anyway, I really love the band I have now, you know?
And the fact that you perform on an ongoing basis, do you find that, I've learned this from talking with musicians and performers the last couple of years, and what they say is that the time for the fun of it is when you're on stage. The rest of it is you're getting paid to travel more than you're getting
right.
paid before, because the traveling is always going to be annoying, especially these days. Versus
it is that's my biggest concern right now, because of the fact the airlines are pretty much off schedule. I've had to wait 7 hours and stuff, and that's a lot for an old man, you know. But anyway, it's what I've done all my life. I've gone almost 94 years without working for a living. Do what you love. It's not work, you know. I'm getting ready for Las Vegas now. I'm going to pull my horn out of the back room today after I start talking to you and start blowing my horn.
Have you performed in Las Vegas before?
Maybe 200 or 300 times. Yeah, that was our first gig with Sly. And that's before all the buildings. That's when they had the strip. It was all massage parlors and stuff. And the original hotel they had there, it was really tiny. It's before they start building all the big buildings. It was massage parlors and the Pussycat a Go-Go. That was where we played. 1967, all the stars used to come there and see us at the time. So right. we played from 12 at night until 6 in the morning. So all the stars in Vegas, we were the talk of the town, so to speak, you know. And I mean, Bobby Darin, I mean, all those people, they loved us. And we really got it together then. Now, on our day off, we would drive to Los Angeles and record at the old CBS at Sunset and Gower, which is not there anymore. And we would record for 16 hours and then go back and play the next night.
You were at the Columbia Square on Sunset and Gower.
Yeah.
They had all the CBS.
Pussycat a Go-Go was great, though, because, the owner of the place was the police sergeant for Las Vegas. And the cops pretty much hated hippie types, and they didn't like blacks either. They were prejudiced, but we got through it all. And I don't want to say anything bad about them because I'm going to Vegas in a few days.
Well, I think you're going to enjoy the Smith Center for the Performing Arts. If you haven't been there before, especially in Myron's, which is a nice intimate room, it's a perfect spot for you guys.
That's what I hear.
Yeah, the acoustics are wonderful and the staging is great. So you guys will probably be enjoying it. Can you give us a sense of what how you structure the performance? In other words, you're obviously doing some of the hits, but you're doing other music as well. I'll let you say it because I
No, we're playing all the songs we're playing are Sly and Family Stone songs.
Okay.
But now we're doing stuff from our first album, which was a flop. Okay. And we sold 30,000 records in Las Vegas and New York, and it was a bomb everywhere else because we had new beats and stuff, you know. Underdog was our first hit. Not it wasn't a hit. It sold in Vegas and New York, but it had a beat that goes and everything went bum 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 bum. That was Motown, you know. That was the thing. But there was no, it was none of this, you know. Plus, what people never knew about us is we all loved country music. We loved country music. We didn't do any. We Campbell, Rose Stone, she loved country music. She loved Dan Murray. So we had the influence in their head, and their styles reflected all of that. So country people loved us too, you know?
That's interesting. I never realized that there was that connection with
you. Yeah, I still love country music. I play in country bands sometimes. Years ago, I walked into a country club in Vegas after my local gig, and I had my sax, and the guy said, "I think you might be in the wrong place, son." I said, "Well, why don't we find out?" And I love country music. You know? And, You see, blues is blues. It's all how you twist it, you know? Right. I still play in country bands because Sly and Rose lived it too, because it's all about this. And if you look at it that way, you're not going to isolate anything, you know?
So you could be the new Porter Wagner then.
What was that?
You could be the new Porter Wagner.
Oh, I don't know about that.
No, I'm going way back into country music.
Yeah, you are.
I know. I was going to say Johnny Cash, but I said, you know, I'm going to go back a little bit further than Johnny Cash.
Yeah. Well, I go back to Boots Randolph.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah. That's good, too.
I knew all his songs, you know?
That's great. Well, when you are off the road and you're at home relaxing, do you listen to, besides country, and obviously you're rehearsing as well, always keeping in shape, do you listen to other kinds of music?
I listen to jazz. I've always loved jazz, but what I didn't like about it in the old days, that's why there's no more jazz music stations, is that I was asked, well, what's wrong with it? I'd look at him, I'd say, too many notes. Mm-hmm. Just too many notes, you know? They got to slow it down. And jazz has evolved into what everything is today. You can still throw some nice melodies in there or some out there. You know, you have different kind of jazz music, different scales. But it's all one now, you know. There's no jazz clubs anymore that I know of.
Oh, there are in Las Vegas. And there's also a jazz radio station in Las Vegas.
So oh, yeah. But it's enjoy it. In my last 60 years, it's changed drastically. And I mean, they don't have any jazz radio stations like they used to. That was my favorite, you know.
In Los Angeles, did you, you basically stayed in Los Angeles most of your life?
No, hardly ever.
Oh, hardly ever. Okay.
You know, I had an apartment there years ago, and I stayed with various naughty people like me. And but actually, I grew up in San Francisco, and I moved to Marin County. In 1970, I bought the old Italian embassy in Marin County. That they kicked them out because Italy was on the wrong side of the war. I bought $6 million now for my ex-house. I paid $60,000 for it in 1970.
Amazing.
And overlooked all of Forest Knolls. I don't want to get into it, but what a house.
Very
nice. Hanky went on there.
Well, the reason I ask you about L.A., because there used to be a jazz station or two in L.A., but I don't think it's there anymore. Not living there. Was there someone in particular, besides Sly, obviously, but was there someone else that inspired you as a musician when you were growing up? And who would that
Ray be? Charles, Billy Preston. We all love Ray Charles. So I used to go see him play, you know, at the scene, 46th and 8th in New York. That's where everybody went. The English bands, us. Jimi Hendrix used to play there, and was a good friend. I talked to him 2 days before he died. The last gig he did was Furman Island on the Baltic Sea, and it was a total bomb. And they was a bunch of German gangs there. They killed the promoter. I mean, it was crazy. Wow. Bullets flying everywhere. But anyway, I saw Jimmy in the elevator. He gave me a hug because we were friends. And he went to his apartment, and he died 2 days later. Mm. And same thing with Janis Joplin. Now, one of my ex-roadies became her boyfriend, and she died in Marin County. And he called me up one day and said, he goes, she just shot up. She fell flat in her face. She's dead. What do I do? I said, his name is Phil. That's all I'll say. I said, clean the place up and call the police. And that was the end of that, but I loved her. We all loved her. Sly loved her, you know, and she was a Texas bar girl. And she could sing her ass off. You know, we loved her, you know.
Are you amazed that when you think back of your history, your professional history, and mm-hmm. stories you could tell, the fact that you're still here and so many people have gone either at an early or middle age, yet you're still plugging along. So do you ever look at that and back in awe in a way that you...
Not at all. My grandpa lived to be 110. He rode a horse until then, and he used to go get all the gangs and kill them and bring them to the governor for his stuff. He was a bounty hunter. And He was a bad boy. He was half Navajo and half Irish.
110.
Like, I'm a mutt. I'm Italian, Russian, Irish, and Navajo. I was going to say something, but we're on here.
That's okay. How meaningful was the induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for you?
How many what?
How meaningful was it for you to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
We got inducted before they built it in 1993. The governor of Ohio inducted us, and then they built it in 95. I've been there many times, and they bring it underneath, and they give us a private room and stuff. I don't drink anymore, but they bring in champagne and all that stuff, you know.
Pretty exciting, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, but, you know, it's a time to hold them and time to fold them, man. I'm a lifelong drinker, but I quit drinking about 3-4 years ago, you know. It's funny. I mean, I don't know if that is the cause, but Freddie Stone, Sly's brother, has been a pastor for 25 years. And when I became a Christian, he baptized me. And that's the day I quit drinking. And it wasn't intentional. It just happened that way, you know?
Do you think it's ironic that your last name is Martini?
Well, I've been teased about that since 1800.
I know. I didn't think it was an original question, but I had to.
I would get in fights over that, you know, in school, because it's just a Northern Italian name. It's Toscano, Tocopi, Sambora Ragazza, Tocasero, you know? I look more Irish because I am part Irish, but I'm legally a mutt.
Well, that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee and original founding member of Sly and the Family Stone, Jerry Martini. He's going to be performing with Fun Stone and the Family Stone in Myron at the Smith Center August 8th at 5 and 8 p.m. And for ticket information, go to thesmithcenter.com. For everything about the Family Stone, go to thefamilystoneband.com, thefamilystoneband.com, and you can follow them on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And Jerry, thanks for being on the show.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you. See you next time.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. When you